Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. My name is Lauren Litton. I am the host of Spotlight on Youth, a radio show dedicated to social and legal trends impacting the rights and well-being of children across the country. Spotlight on Youth is a project of Children's Law Center, Inc., a not-for-profit children's rights legal services organization. The show is being streamed live over the Internet and will be available on demand after its conclusion. We encourage you to participate by asking questions live on air by dialing 347-994-1149. That's 347-994-1149. To indicate you have a question, press the number 1 on your telephone keypad, and you'll be placed in a queue to be on the air. Also, feel free to log into the chat room and pose a question there. Mary McLeod Bethune, an American educator and civil rights leader, said, "We have a powerful potential in our youth, and we must have the courage to change old ideas and practices so that we may direct their power toward good ends." The topic of today's show is very timely given the upcoming elections where civic engagement, the economy, poverty, and the educational system are front and center for examination and debate. The stark reality is that many youth in the United States are neither enrolled in school nor participating in the labor market. A recent report indicated that 6.7 million young adults aged 16 to 24 fit into that category for a variety of reasons. For example, they may have dropped out of school and have been unable to find work. They may be involved with the juvenile criminal justice system. They may have mental health or a physical condition that inhibits their activities. Or they may have caregiving responsibilities for their families. These youth are disproportionately male and from minority groups, but substantial rates are found for all youth. So critical questions exist about how do we ready our youth for a new and changing workforce? How do we create meaningful and culturally relevant opportunities for marginalized youth? How do we help children and youth reach their full potential if they're at risk or involved with the juvenile justice system? Youth engagement is a strategy being used to address some of these questions. The foundation of effective youth development policy and programming is youth engagement. It's not just about building core competency, but it's about actively engaging young people in their own development within the context of their lives. Research has demonstrated a clear link between youth engagement activities and a variety of beneficial outcomes at both the individual and community levels. We have three people joining us today to discuss youth engagement. Two are from the organization Youth Prize, whose mission is to champion learning beyond the classroom so that all Minnesota youth thrive. Youth Prize aims to align and leverage resources towards making out-of-school time activities accessible, innovative, sustainable, and high quality. Youth Prize was started by the McKnight Foundation in their desire to establish an independent entity or an intermediary to ensure their focus and impact on out-of-school time would continue to grow. Marcus Pope is the Director of Strategic Initiatives and Outreach at Youth Prize. In that role, he builds cross-sector collaborations, oversees evaluation, and facilitates youth leadership and engagement within the organization. Previously, he was the Associate Director of the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, the Director of Youth Programs for the Neighborhood Involvement Program, and a Graduate Assistant Academic Advisor for the Youth Studies Program at the University of Minnesota School of Social Work. Marcus holds an interdisciplinary undergraduate degree in sociology, youth studies, and African American studies, and a master's in youth development leadership. Alexandria Rice is a lead youth engagement specialist at Youth Prize, ensuring that youth play integral roles at all levels and in all aspects of the organization's work. She grew up engaging in many service learning projects as well as programs outside of school. She currently is an undergraduate student at Hamline University. As a member of the Baha'i faith, Alexandria values service to humanity as a main focus of life, and building community is a key element of this service. She has been involved in teaching and mentoring programs for both children and junior youth ages 12 to 15 in an effort to empower these young people to take action in their own communities. Nikema Levy-Pounds is a law professor at the University of St. Thomas and the founder and director of the Community Justice Project, an award-winning civil rights legal clinic. She's an expert on civil rights issues, economic justice, and issues of race, class, and the juvenile and adult criminal justice systems. For the past 5 years, she and her students have worked collaboratively with community stakeholders to co-create a nonprofit organization called Brotherhood, Inc. Brotherhood, Inc. was developed as a grassroots community-based response to help break the devastating cycles of poverty, unemployment, and incarceration facing young African-American males. In 2011, she was named one of the 10 outstanding young Minnesotans by the Minnesota JCs and was recognized for her contribution to the clinical legal education by the American Association of Law Schools. So I'd like to welcome all three of you to the show.
Thank you.
It's time.
Oh, thank you.
So before we get into describing the different mechanisms for implementing youth engagement, I think it's really important to provide a backdrop of why we need to be examining youth engagement as a tool. Marcus, maybe you can tell us, what are some of the trends in our country that beckons us to find new ways to assist our youth, and what has research shown about the effectiveness of youth engagement?
Well, with an aging population and a younger population that is becoming increasingly more diverse, and we all know about the achievement gap and the gap between students of color and white students, so that means that we need to prepare young people for the leadership positions that they will inevitably shoulder in years to come. So the reality is that the trends in terms of students of color failing in school, not being prepared for college and for the workforce, is a trend that we cannot continue. And with significant investments in formal education, we still haven't been able to move the needle in terms of the achievement gap, in terms of the performance of students of color. So we need a complementary strategy, another strategy that looks at how do we move the needle in terms of youth of color, being able to assume these leadership roles. So let me back up and go and talk about what youth engagement is. Youth engagement comes out of positive youth development, and it's an authentic involvement of youth in civic, social, and cognitive activities that promote their growth and the growth of communities. And at Youth Prize, what we talk about is the authentic engagement of youth in the design, implementation, and evaluation of intervention strategies. And so one thing that's often missing in intervention strategies is really how do you engage the target population in helping make the change that we want to see. And it's our belief that if you don't have youth truly invested in intervention strategies, you won't achieve the change that you need. So youth engagement is really a strategy to really get the investment in young people and making the change that even they themselves want to occur. The problem is that strategies are often prescribed and imposed on young people as opposed to actively involving young people as participants in driving the change that we all want to see and the change that is essential for our social and economic prosperity as a country. So that's just a little background to help us kind of set the stage as we think about youth engagement.
Great. Does anyone have anything else they want to add to that?
Well, just to echo what Marcus is stating, I think that when we're thinking about the concept of youth engagement, it's important to see this as a holistic approach. In other words, how do we ensure that all aspects of support that youth need are being brought to the table? So it's one thing for us to focus on, you know, a youth's educational needs, but it's another for us to ensure that they have adequate out-of-school time opportunities, that they have employment opportunities, that they're able to engage in leadership development opportunities so that, as Marcus suggested, they can be ready to seize the opportunity to become the leaders of the future, to become our next generation of workers, if you will. And so I think one of the things that's important in this is for us as a society to recognize the value of our young people so often we marginalize them or we assume that they don't have much to contribute, when in fact young people are creative and I would say brilliant in terms of the things that they have to offer to our society. And so youth engagement builds upon the skills of young people and fully incorporates their ideas and their perspectives into different initiatives that might be established.
Right. Yeah, and many times what happens is you look at these youth, and many times there are programs or there are organizations or there's people that want to work with youth, but they end up kind of viewing the youth as the consumer. And I think both Nikema and Marcus were touching on that, is the youth are receiving the service. But in fact, those programs and those opportunities for youth that really, truly engage them and enrich them as people are those that are really, as Nikema was saying, looking to them as kind of experts on themselves, but also resources for the whole community and assets for changing the society. And so it has to be an authentic relationship, authentic program, whatever it is that's happening in terms of youth engagement. Youth can tell when it's not authentic.
That's a really good point, Alexandria. And one thing we talk about is when we think about sustainability, there's often only, we often only look at it from the perspective of finance, but sustainability is about young people. I don't care if you have a sustainability plan and you're not thinking seriously about young people, about the next generation, your sustainability plan is flawed. So sustainability
exactly.
is also about young people, and we need to be true to that and how we include them, not just for their own benefit, but for the benefit of us and our and the benefit of our society.
Terrific. And perhaps a little bit later, I really want to sort of delve more into what does an authentic relationship look like, and then some of these challenges that you're talking about and ways to do it well. But just to step back, because I think, Nikema, you were talking about this holistic picture. You know, when I have heard about youth engagement, I hear all different kind of things like youth adults, partnerships, mentoring, out-of-school programming, social entrepreneurship, youth voice and leadership, which I think are all pieces of this holistic response. But can you sort of walk our listeners through what each of these things are and what they can accomplish?
Well,
sure.
To start off, oh, Nikema, did you want to start?
No,
or?
I was going to say I'd recommend Alex.
Oh, okay. So one of the ones that you mentioned, and at least here at Youth Prize, one that we really value out of these different models for youth engagement is the youth-adult partnership that you mentioned. And this is just one of them, so maybe I can take this one. But we basically view that interaction between an adult and a youth as critical for actually moving forward in any situation. And so as Marcus was talking about sustainability, we need to think about how to make sure that we have those who are young and have so many dreams and so far to go in their lives, how do we engage them in the same project kind of that adults are working on with all of their expertise? Basically, as Marcus talked about earlier as well, we believe that it's extremely imperative to have those who are most impacted by an issue a part of the discussion on how to find a solution and a part of executing that solution. And so in this situation where we were talking about the achievement gap and having so many young people just dropping out of school, not engaged in work, all of these things for various reasons, we need to make sure that the young people who are experiencing that are at the table talking about this. So this model of youth-adult partnership is one in which youth, young people and older people are truly working together on an equal plane. We're sitting at the same table. We're having the same discussion. We're looking to each other with respect and understanding and knowing that we each come with a lot to offer. And this can be implemented in many different situations, in government, in policy, in smaller nonprofit organizations, in maybe even organizations that work with youth as well. But it doesn't have to be limited to that.
Yep. I think that's good. And there are a lot of phrases. There's youth leadership. There's youth governance. You talk about youth. You asked about youth adult mentoring. I think one thing to know is that there's a lot of informal work going on, and then there's also the formal work, specifically related to mentoring. People talk about mentoring, and most mentoring that occurs is informal. So when we think about youth engagement, it's important for us to think about things that happen formal in our communities around youth engagement through non-formal education programs, and to think about the informal ways that we can be intentional about authentically engaging youth in programs and systems and in our society. Because for us, the biggest piece, what's most important for us, is that young people have voice and that they're authentically integrated. So when they're authentically integrated, what that means is that what is occurring is meaningful and it's relevant. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, meaning and relevance don't necessarily always occur in a programmatic setting. Programmatic settings are good, and we need to think about how do within our programmatic settings integrate young people in those settings. But the overall message that we like to send when we talk about youth engagement, when we talk about youth voice, is that this is something that we need to really be serious about integrating into our society. And the great thing about, I think, Brotherhood, Inc., which Nikema will talk about more, is that they have a really strong social entrepreneurship model that integrates young people in our society, and they're visible in many ways and through their social entrepreneurship. One thing I want to back up and say, too, and then I'd love for you to expand on the social entrepreneurship piece, Nikema, is to say that youth engagement is not just about privileged youth. Youth engagement has relevance when you're working with homeless youth, youth mm-hmm. with disabilities, youth involved in the juvenile justice system. So this is not a situation where you get the valedictorian or the top of the class and you engage them authentically in decision-making and in leadership opportunities. This is a tool, is a mechanism that is effective and is appropriate for all young people, regardless of socioeconomic status and so forth.
Well, I would definitely have to agree with what Alexandria and Marcus just articulated. I would say that one of the things that I've seen in my experience is that adults, one, have an interest in looking at the issues affecting youth, but two, they don't often know how to get started. And so I can just give one brief example of a situation where the church that I used to attend in the Twin Cities was right across the street from a recreation center. And that recreational center is only open 2 hours a day, 4 days a week. And so there's not adequate out-of-school programming for young people. And what was important for the adults who were a part of my church to recognize is that the young people actually needed adults who, one, would pay attention to what was happening in terms of the lack of out-of-school programming, and then, two, make a decision to step up to the plate and create an environment where young people, you know, would feel welcome and would have an opportunity to engage with caring adults from the community. And so the adults were able to actually advocate to the city on behalf of the young people, because we found out the city was thinking about closing down the rec center. And then the church actually had adults involved with volunteering and creating activities to engage young people so that, you know, once they would go over to the rec center, they weren't just sort of sitting there looking around, but they could engage in games. We could provide food and that mentoring that happens informally, as Marcus talked about. So I just want to throw that out there, because I think the hardest part for people who are interested in this topic is actually getting started. And I would say the first place to start is right around you. You know, wherever mm-hmm. you see a need, thinking, you know, about the fact that you can make a difference by figuring out, you know, what the issues are, and then deciding that you're going to get involved. And that led to That mindset has led to a lot of the work that we've been engaged in the community, even in terms of developing social entrepreneurial opportunities for young people, because we recognize that there are a lot of nonprofits here in the Twin Cities who are doing great work, and even nationally with youth and training them to take on different jobs. But there's a disconnect between job training and a young person's ability to actually land employment. So we decided to actually tap into some of the natural entrepreneurial skills that these young people have. And we said, you know, why not create jobs? Why not take it a step further beyond job training and actually create jobs? And even going beyond job creation to actually teaching the young men how to move up in the company and within the organization. And I think that, you know, and I can talk about it a little bit later, but that's how we've been able to build authentic partnerships with young people and build a sense of trust and community by thinking outside the box.
Great. I think that these on-the-ground examples are really critical on this show because people are listening, and it brings life to what we're talking about. So the more that you can talk about and give examples like that, I think it's really appreciated. I'm sorry, it sounds like, Alexandra, you were going to say something.
Oh, no, I was just going to go off of what Nikema had just said. And the thing that's so valuable about the entire process that you just described is it's so real, you know? And that's the thing about young people is that things have to be real. We're experiencing life. We know when things aren't authentic, and we also know what we need. And so, like, one, tapping into that, that's exactly how you find out what youth need is just by asking a youth. But then also, I think the thing is, and Nikema, I think you also touched on this, is the idea of youth are whole beings. We're whole people, you know? We go to school, and we're educated by people in school and in the classroom, and then we go out, and then hopefully there are opportunities for us to be engaged outside of school as well, but a lot of times there's not. And then if there's not, you look for a job and then you don't get a job. So, or for a lot of young people, or for a lot of my friends at least. So there's all of these examples of how to engage with youth. And I think the brilliant thing about youth engagement is it taps into the areas that youth are already involved in. So I think the example of Brotherhood Inc. is just such a wonderful program for
so
that
like
reason.
I'd like to actually explore the program a little bit more in depth. I mean, our show is really dedicated to issues that touch juvenile justice as well, and so I know a lot of our listeners are thinking about, so what can they do to divert at-risk children, kids, from juvenile justice system, but also how can we use this within the context of the juvenile justice system to get kids out and to ensure their success so that they don't return and don't have other system involvement.
Right. Well, I'll just talk a little bit about Brotherhood Inc. Brotherhood Inc. is a nonprofit organization for young African-American males ages 16 to 24 who've been in the criminal justice system or gangs or who are at risk of becoming involved in the justice system or gangs. And with Brotherhood, one of the things that we decided to do was to not only teach our young men life skills, but also, as I mentioned before, to really teach them entrepreneurship skills. And that has really gone a long way in terms of restoring our young men back into the community and helping them to see that they already have gifts, they already have talents, they have assets that prior to their involvement in Brotherhood have really not been utilized effectively. And so we like to think of our work as really just helping to restore our young people back to their rightful place within the community. And so the young men actually run the company with adults coming alongside them and offering support and advice and suggestions, with law students coming alongside them and sometimes graduate students as well. We will have business meetings where we all throw out ideas and then we brainstorm and problem solve and then make decisions together. The young men learn customer service skills. They learn how to interact with customers, how to stock inventory. One young man has learned how to enter data into QuickBooks. And so we just really try to take the standard skills that a person would learn if they were operating their own small business, and then we give young people the opportunity to do that. And we really just encourage them to really put their best foot forward and to bring their creativity to the table, you know, and to realize that the things that they've learned, you know, by having a struggle at times and, you know, sometimes being out on the street, that those things can actually be assets in terms of using the skills that they have to take the business to the next level. And then also thinking about how to mentor other young men in the program. And that's very much a deliberate part of the model that we've created. And so it's just exciting to see these young people start from a place where they feel dejected, where they feel that they don't have a place in society, where they've been rejected from different jobs that they've applied for, to really seeing a complete turnaround at the end of a few months where they realize, okay, I am somebody. I'm important. I matter. I have skills. I have talents. And I can use them in this environment and really touch the hearts of other people. And I'd love to see, you know, this whole notion of social entrepreneurship for our youth catch on. Because our young people, again, they can learn the job skills, but if no one is willing to hire them, especially if they've been in contact with the justice system or they don't have the soft skills that are needed, then that's going to have a negative impact on the young person as well as his or her self-esteem at the end of the day.
We have a question from one of our listeners, and I also want to remind our listeners that they can call 347-994-1149 if they want to ask a question live on air, and you will press the number one on your telephone keypad. But the question is sort of two parts. Is one, how did you build trust around Brotherhood, Inc. so that youth who are gang-related would see this as a place that they would want to participate? And then also, how did you sort of sell it to the criminal justice system? Are you getting direct referrals from them?
Okay, those are both excellent questions, and I'll start with the second question first. How do we sell this to the criminal justice system? Well, one of the things that that happened is that this actually has been years in the making. We started to conduct research through my class at the University of St. Thomas, and we saw that young African-American men were falling through the cracks. We saw that they were overrepresented amongst those in the justice system and underrepresented amongst those who were gainfully employed or graduating high school within a four-year period of time. And so that research really led us to connect with government stakeholders and community stakeholders to begin problem-solving and thinking about how can we catch these young people who are not engaged in traditional youth-related opportunities. And so we looked around the country, and we found Homeboy Industries, which is out of L.A., and the work that they were doing around job creation and restoration of people who'd been in gangs back into the system, and or people who'd been in gangs being restored back into the community. And so once we identified the model and continued working with community partners, from that point, we actually tried to sell the program to foundations, to people in government. I mean, the list goes on and on. But given that we were trying to reach a segment of the population that does not get a lot of empathy and sympathy within society, it was a very hard sell. And when we realized that the door was not open, we just had to become creative as far as raising the seed money to get the doors open for this program. And so we opened our doors December of 2011, and about 2 weeks before we opened, we sent out a description of the program and an application saying that we were looking to accept about 10 young men into the program. And so what happened after that is that several probation officers started to send us emails asking if some of the young men who were on their caseloads could be candidates for Brotherhood, Inc. So, again, once our doors were open, we got buy-in from the government as far as referrals into our program. And then in terms of the young men, once we put the application out there and we, you know, let them know that they would actually be able to be employed through the program, that was a very strong sale. for many of the young men. Now, some, you know, obviously were skeptical because they've heard, you know, similar things before, so it's hard for them to have trust. But once they saw that we were consistent, we were committed, and that we followed through in doing what we said we would do, then over time we began to build a very strong level of trust with the young people in the program. So I think that that consistency is important. And beyond that, I think love is important. Really just showing the young people that they matter, that, look, this could be my son. You know, this could be my daughter. And having that type of attitude towards the young people. And so when they saw that we really had love for them and wanted them to be successful, and we didn't just see them as a consumer, that made a huge difference in terms of their buy-in and commitment to the program.
Nikema, I'd like to add, knowing, you know, having worked with Brotherhood, Inc. and knowing about the work you do, is that there was a strong community engagement approach where you went deep into the community to talk to people, to engage them, to get their buy-in, to get their blessing, elders, young people, and everyone to really support this initiative and for it to be developed from the ground up.
Yes.
Is that a big piece of it as well?
Absolutely. We could not have opened our doors without strong community support. One of the things that we found is, you know, being in academia, being in the legal profession, that sometimes there's a disconnect between what happens at the community level. And so we wanted to intentionally break down some of those barriers by going out into the community and actually engaging in listening sessions with young people, as well as with adults and, you know, grandparents who were raising young people who had been involved in the system, and really hearing from them what some of the challenges were that young people were facing. Once we gathered that information and we put this initial plan in place called Brotherhood, Inc., we actually took that back out into the community again. And, you know, we did a PowerPoint presentation and a discussion with community members to say, okay, if we were to get the resources to start this program, would you all be interested? And there was an overwhelmingly positive response from the people in attendance. We had grandmothers who were crying and just saying that they desperately thought a program like this was needed to help, you know, steer their young person in a different direction. And once we got that buy-in, we said, okay, we're going to have to establish a nonprofit organization. We had never done anything like that before, and it's definitely not typical for a law school to be engaged at this level. But we knew that it, you know, we were a vehicle, you know, to help get this done. And so for our board, we intentionally recruited community members at the grassroots level. So folks who maybe wouldn't necessarily be invited to join corporate boards were invited to be a part of this board, and then they were asked who else should be at the table. And we spent about 2 years around the table just getting to know each other, you know, hearing from each other, brainstorming ideas, and all of that has led to the development of what is now Brotherhood, Inc. So it's very much an intentional process that included community voice every step of the way, and community is who's been motivating us, you know, month after month to just keep going and keep pressing and keep doing the work that we're doing.
Can you give just maybe a little bit more detail about the process that a youth would move through at, you know, in Brotherhood, Inc., and you were talking about jobs. Where are kids working? Are they starting their own businesses, just so that people have some concrete examples?
Sure. So once a young person comes into the door at Brotherhood, Inc., well, one, we have limited capacity. We have a very small space, about 500 square feet, at least to start. So we have ambitions, you know, of growing much larger. So we have capacity for about 10 young people to be a part of the program. And once they come into the program, they go through an interview process where we learn, you know, about them and their history, and they learn about what we're hoping to accomplish in collaboration with the young people in our program. And if they identify that it's a good fit for them, then from there they start coming into the door, you know, on a daily basis. You know, they're not required to come on a daily basis. We don't have any government funding or anything like that that restricts, you know, anything related to the time commitment and the number of days and number of hours or anything like that. And so they participate in classes. And so our classes deal with anything from how to open a checking account to financial management, to African American history and literature, to health and wellness, to customer service and developing business skills. And so we usually have two-hour classes that take place 3 to 4 days a week. We also have a session where the young men are actually able to talk and get things off their chest called Real Talk. And so we have a case manager who has those discussions with the young men where they're able to basically explore topics that might be off limit, you know, in a different type of program. But we want that authentic youth engagement. And so they have those very honest and candid conversations. And it's almost like a form of therapy for the young men because they really unload a lot about the stresses that they experience on a regular basis in an environment where they're not judged for, you know, speaking the truth about their experiences. And then in the afternoons, we shift and focus on Brotherhood Brew, which is the coffee business that we started. And so through Brotherhood Brew, the guys offer fresh, organic, fair trade coffee, tea, and hot cocoa, you know, and they sell this to businesses, nonprofits, churches, and individuals. And so they, you know, talk about their customers and, you know, what are the next steps in terms of following up with the customer, seeing what type of equipment a customer needs, what type of coffee or tea that the customer would want to order, different events that we have on the calendar, and we go through a planning process for that. And so we had one young man, for example, who walked in our doors really on the brink of despair last December. He was experiencing depression. And, you know, he had tried to commit suicide twice in the past, you know, and he shared this publicly, so I'm comfortable sharing parts of his story. But he was really just on the brink of despair. He was a senior in high school. He didn't know if he would graduate, and he was ready to give up. And when we interviewed him, you know, initially we were thinking, oh, my goodness, I mean, this young man has been through so much. Do we have the capacity, you know, to handle his situation? But by the end of the interview, we just decided, you know what, this is who we're here to help. Young people who are on the brink of despair and who need hope and who need to be revived and restored. And so within a couple of weeks, we had the young man's school calling saying, what are you all doing at Brotherhood? This young man has now become a coffee salesman extraordinaire, you know, because he had all of his teachers started buying coffee from him. And it just brought so much joy for the young man and even for his teachers to see a change in this young man. So he graduated from high school this past spring and actually is now a freshman in college. So that's just, and we're continuing to support him, you know, through his work. He loves photography. So our goal is to really help him start his own small business where he's able to sell, you know, his photographs, maybe turning them into postcards and things like that. We've also trained him in public speaking. So he's been able to even have another stream of income through his public speaking based on the experiences that he's able to share as someone who lived to tell the story. So that's just one example of the work that we're doing. Again, with a very small amount of resources, we're bootstrappers in terms of the resources that we have. But what we've been able to accomplish has been amazing, and we rely upon volunteers to help us with the bulk of our work. Yeah. And then there's
and
another quick story. Go ahead.
We're a witness of this here at Youth Prize. Brotherhood, Inc., very early on, we called them. We were having a philanthropy breakfast where we were bringing together public and private funders of youth programs to talk about how do we close the gap when it comes to African-American youth. And we needed a vendor for coffee and for juice. And they rose to the challenge, and they were our vendor at our event. And one thing about youth engagement is we try to think about how do we support youth businesses or youth-led social entrepreneur or social enterprises. And so Brotherhood, Inc. was is really on our short list in terms of vendors when we have events that bring different people together and we need a coffee vendor. And I've seen them throughout the community here in the Twin Cities at different events with a presence selling coffee. And it's just a beautiful thing to see the young men there as a part of the social entrepreneurship. And the thing that's great about Brotherhood, Inc. for me is that we work with several programs. We have 101 grantees, and Brotherhood, Inc. is very intentional about working with the underserved of the underserved. We talk about the at-risk. We talk about the underserved. But even within that, there's an underserved where traditional programs oftentimes don't connect with young people. And that just your story of being able to connect with a young man who was suicide and the history of this and that, and you said, this is what we're here to do. And I think that's just wonderful, that focus and that that commitment.
Thank you.
It's tremendous. So while we are sort of talking about on the ground, are there some other things happening, programming and promising practices around the country that you want to talk about?
Well, I think Youth Prize in and of itself is one promising practice. You know, the fact that the McKnight Foundation would see the need to develop an organization with an intentional focus on being able to support youth-related programming and initiatives, I think is outstanding. And so so on a personal level, I mean, I'm very impressed with the work that Youth Prize is doing, and I've seen them intentionally engage youth at all levels in their programming, and to understand, you know, that there's youth at risk, but there's youth who are really, really, really at risk, you know, who've been in the system and who don't fit into traditional programming. And they see that and they acknowledge that, and they're trying to help bridge those gaps. So I think that that's certainly a promising practice. We all know about the Harlem Children's Zone and the fantastic work that they're doing in terms of reaching families and children and bridging the gap between education and quality of life. We've had a couple of spinoffs here in the Twin Cities. So we have the St. Paul Promise Neighborhoods Initiative, and we also have a Minneapolis-related initiative that's implementing those same those similar practices from the Harlem Children's Zone. So those are a couple that I've seen that I think are on the right track.
And on a national level, in other places around the country, when we talk about one thing we're focused on is really looking at some of the gaps in terms of homeless youth, juvenile justice system, youth with disabilities. And there's a really strong program in Nashville called OASIS that's really looking at youth leadership in terms of working with homeless youth, and I think that's a good initiative. Another thing, when you talk about youth voice, if you ask the average middle school, high school young person what's their priority in terms of how they want us to focus our resources, youth employment rises to the top all the time. We have a youth congress here, and they say their number one priority is youth employment. And We Can't Wait initiative by the White House, the current administration, saying we can't wait, we need to think about youth employment. And so they had a huge push this summer around youth employment and really getting buy-in from corporations to really be intentional about hiring youth so they can get those practical experiences and leadership opportunities within the context of employment. Another thing that I'll highlight and then turn it over to Alexandria is, as we talk about formal education and school reform, we don't think about how do we engage the student population in school reform. And so there's a really, in terms of Youth on Board, has a really strong initiative, and they have a publication on their website, students as co-constructors of learning environments, and some case studies from Sacramento and Boston around how they really thought about how do we engage as students in thinking about school reform. So those are a few examples. Alexandra, do you have anything to add?
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many different examples, but a few that I personally think are really impressive.
There are a few here in Minnesota where it really looks at government and how we make sure that youth are engaged in government. So Marcus just referenced them, but the Minneapolis Youth Coordinating Board has Minneapolis Youth Congress, and their tagline is no decision about us without us. So for them, they're very engaged in the actual Minneapolis government itself. And then also the Minnesota Alliance with Youth has an entire statewide youth council, Minnesota Statewide Youth Council, and they have representatives from each of the districts. So I'm forgetting how many youth there are on the council, but they work within their own districts, in their own communities, and at the same time looking at the entire state through policy. How do we make sure that youth are remembered when things are passed? How do we make sure that decisions that will affect us as young people for the rest of our lives are our voices are taken into consideration in those situations? So those are some when it comes to government. And then also there's this really neat organization that's actually our partner, Youth Prize's partner, called Youth Thrive. And they are located here in Minneapolis as well. And they have multiple programs all with youth, but the most amazing thing to me is that they have trainings for any youth-adult partnership situation. So they'll go actually all over the country and train people on train youth and adults on how to work together authentically and how to get the most out of each situation. So those are a few that I can think of. But here at Youth Prize, we have that same value of youth and adults working at all levels of the organization as well. And so we have tried to integrate that as thoroughly as possible, and we're still continuing to try to do that because we believe that with all the organizations we work with, if that's what we hope that they'll eventually work with, like Brotherhood Inc., they have youth running it. That's amazing. We want to do it as well because we can't ask something of others that we're not doing ourselves. So I actually was one of the first youth on the Youth Prize board, and I got to be a part of kind of actually founding Youth Prize, working with McKnight and really charging through, okay, what is this organization going to look like? How do we want to form it? How big is it going to be? What's the name going to be? All of that, you know? And so from the beginning, Youth Prize had youth involved for just in everything. And now they have youth working for them, and I'm actually working for them now, which is wonderful. And I think any organization that strives to engage youth at all levels is just really heading in the right direction.
And so, Alexandria, I don't know if you, because since you were, you know, a youth who was so involved, and I think in different organizations as well, from your own perspective, what, if you feel comfortable sharing, what worked as strategies of engagement for you, and what things did you experience? You don't have to be too specific, that really did not work, you know, as tips for others listening in.
Yeah. Well, I think just like in any situation, you have to get comfortable with each other as people. And even in, you know, just anyone's job situation, I'm sure when you have a new job, you have to get comfortable with others. But sometimes there's kind of a stigma around young people that just exists in the world, you know? Like, I think a lot of people look to the horrible statistics and sometimes think that maybe it's the youth themselves who aren't applying themselves or whatever they think, right? And I'm trying not to accuse anyone of this. I think it is a trend. And so what I found was that many times adults just aren't necessarily comfortable or familiar with how to engage with someone who's younger than them. And it's sometimes a little tricky just because you're asked as a youth what you think, but in fact you're just one person. So you can't speak for all people your age, but you're asked of that. That's asked of you many times. And so trying to help adults understand that many of us need to be asked and many of us need to be engaged, and you can't look to just one or two young people. That's not enough. Let's see. And then also kind of a funny phenomena seems to happen where you know, you start with one extreme of, you know, older, younger, I'm sorry, adults running things, and that's just kind of how our society works right now. And so kind of having programs or boards or whatever of adults doing the work, and then maybe not having the best idea of how to integrate youth into it and, like, listen to their opinion. And then there's the other extreme where sometimes they look to youth and they're just so excited that youth are even engaged or even coming to the program or even being a part of things that it's like anything the youth says is amazing. And that's good. I mean, it's wonderful to listen to youth. As a youth, it's wonderful to be heard. But also you need to view them as an equal and as someone you're going to work with. And so, I don't know, I think I found the most enriching, amazing conversations and projects that happened were those that I was treated as a person with respect. And so even when I said something, someone would say, well, is that really what you mean? Or could we work this through? And so we would go off of each other in the conversation and build on it rather than like whatever I said was just great. And then it became an equal, reciprocal, mutual situation that we both got a lot out of, you know?
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, we have only about 10 minutes left. So I think just continuing this conversation a little bit, and Marcus and Akima, adding any sort of recommendations or tips for governments, communities, other foundations, organizations that want to begin a project that involves youth engagement that you haven't talked about, things that you want to share.
Well, I think the first step is really just getting started. And that's sometimes, as I mentioned before, it's the hardest step because people are intimidated or, you know, they feel that they don't have a solid grasp, you know, of the issue, or they're afraid of the young people, which I've seen happen as well. But again, I think the first step is getting started, and I think it's important to really begin at the level of relationship building. Once you connect with other folks from different sectors who have an interest in this area, who maybe have experience or expertise, and really just start informal discussions, I think from there you're able to really pinpoint what are the most critical issues, what do we have the capacity to handle, how are we going to delegate responsibility, and then what are our next steps. And so I've been engaged in initiatives with government, with community, as I mentioned before, and the first step was just beginning to meet and talk through the concerns. And each group had their own vantage point about the issue, but it was important to hear the other group's perspective on what was happening so that we could come to a place of tension. You know, a lot of folks want to come to a place of consensus. That's not always the place you arrive at when you're dealing with people who see things from different perspectives. I think a place of tension is helpful if everyone's willing to stay in there and be uncomfortable. From there, you can actually build momentum that will yield some lasting results. And so getting started is the hardest point, being willing to be uncomfortable, and then actually just moving ahead with what you think makes sense. And once you step into that realm, from there, all sorts of opportunities and possibilities will come to the surface.
Yes. I think,
that's
too,
wonderful.
If you want to be serious, go ahead, Alexandria.
No, it's fine. I will add after you.
Okay. Well, a few things, I think. If you want to be serious about youth engagement, authentic youth engagement, you have to be willing to make a long-term commitment, and that's team building, partnership building with young people, consistent, frequent interactions with young people. I think you also want to just not just ask opinions, but ask young people to act and to be a part of decision-making and be a part of evaluating and redeciding how you're going to reshape things based on what you learn from evaluating what you're doing. I think it has to be issue-driven, but youth naming and framing the issues, not adults naming and framing the issues and then asking youth for input, but youth actually naming and framing the issues. And then I think it should be collaborative, an emphasis on team building and about engaging the communities they come from also in it. So it's You can't work with diverse youth without engaging their communities. And I think a lot of people who even subscribe to positive youth development and youth engagement are comfortable, sometimes more comfortable with engaging diverse youth, and then sometimes exclude them from their communities and operate as if they don't come from communities. So you have to do both because they come from communities. So those are a few things I would add.
And just something to add on that, it seems that there's a trend where a lot of times programs will create this whole amazing program where they want youth to come, and sometimes they'll get a bunch of people in the beginning, but then the numbers will dwindle. I think that's kind of a lot of times something that people feel is, oh, why aren't they coming back? Why aren't they here? Why aren't they coming back? And really what it comes down to is if you've designed something for youth and they weren't involved in it, then they probably won't really feel, they'll feel that it wasn't designed with them in mind, if that makes sense. Or it may have just been a shoot and miss on the part of the adults by not hearing where the youth were coming from. And so that's the point that Marcus was saying that is just so, in my mind, it's so imperative to have youth from the beginning talking about what they need and then also acting and being a part of implementing that and getting other youth there. And it'll probably be way more successful anyway if you do that. And then another thing just to touch on is that sometimes it can be tricky because if you are engaging with youth, sometimes if you have a business, you even have to think about the hours that youth are free. So if they're not yet out of high school, you know, you may end up having your business hours from like 1 or 2 till 5 or 6. And so that's, or even later. And sometimes there has to be a switch in your mindset of how things are quote unquote supposed to go in order to make sure that youth are the ones who you are really thinking in terms of, and when they have time and how they can get there. And transportation can be really hard too for youth when it comes to being involved. So thinking about that.
Yeah. Well, we are at final comments right now. So I don't know if there's anything that any of you want to share sort of about your hopes for the field, you know, where would you like to see things 10 years from now? Or any other thoughts about really this is a strategy with youth that are juvenile justice involved? And really, we only have about 2 minutes total, so keep that in mind.
Sure.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Alexandria.
Just really quickly, my hope for the next 5 to 10 years is that our society changes to a point where all levels of our society are thinking in terms of supporting and engaging and working with young people, and there is no ageism between the two. I think our society would be really wholesome if that were to begin to happen.
I think providers, people who are intervening with youth and who are thinking seriously about youth engagement, ask yourself the question, how am I modeling, or how is my organization modeling the vision that I have for young people and the vision I have for the issue I'm trying to address? And if people look internally, if organizations look internally, if systems look internally at that, that is the key, in my opinion, to solving a lot of the issues around if it's juvenile justice or whatever. How are our institutions modeling the vision that we have for young people or the vision that we say we have?
I agree wholeheartedly with what Alexandria and Marcus just stated. I hope that people listening to this program will be inspired and motivated to find out what's happening with the young people in their community and be willing to roll up their sleeves and get involved, because there are young people, I can guarantee you, that are waiting for an adult to actually pay some attention to them, to mentor them, and to encourage them to keep persevering. So that's my hope, that some ideas will be sparked that will lead to some positive change for the young people in our community.
Terrific. And I just want to let the listeners know, if you want more information about Brotherhood, Inc., you can go to brotherhoodmn for Minnesota.org, and Youth Prize is youthprize.org. Thank you so much, Nikema Marcus and Alexandria, for joining us today. It was terrific.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. This was great.
So we're excited to report that we have around 4,000 listeners, and we want to thank you all for tuning in. Our next show will focus on the Prison Rape Elimination Act, and the guests will discuss how PREA relates to juvenile correctional facilities and adult jails and prisons where kids are held. So to stay informed about upcoming shows, you can either follow us here at Blog Talk Radio or visit the Children's Law Center's website at www.childrenslawky.org. Take care and see you next time on Spotlight on Youth.